1 year ago, he learned the truth, and his first year of Geek Tyrant Weekly podcasts became legend. And so, for Dr. Venkman and his friends, another year begins. The education of the geeky arts continues with Abe Froman, Root Mazer, Bob Neek, and Ben P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Geek Tyrant Podcast number 52. Today, we are going to get back into talking about movies and TV shows and video games and all kinds of great geeky things that we've got going on.
Mariah Carey.
I think you should tell the regular listeners that if they're expecting the box office numbers, that they need to tune into EMH's box office.
Tune into EMH's box office predictions and accountability.
Because we don't get predictions.
No, we don't get predictions, but he does his box office numbers, which is up right now, so you check that out. Hold on. Wait,
okay,
We totally forgot.
Continue.
Who's here today? Yeah, we got to introduce the Ben P's here.
Yeah.
One of our writers, staff writers. Ben P is joining us on the podcast for the first time.
What's going on, guys? Yeah. How are you doing?
We're wearing matching shirts.
We are. Totally.
As you can all plainly see.
As you can all see.
Right.
Via the podcast.
It's good to have him here, though. He's been a good asset to our team.
Yes. Appreciate that.
Contributing much.
Yes. And then the rest of us, just the normal gang.
Remazer.
Bankman.
Abe Roman.
Bob Meek.
Yeah. And let's talk about movies. Okay. This week, three of us went and saw the huge hit. Made $65 million, right?
Yeah.
$65 million?
Yeah.
2012?
Mm-hmm.
And we went and saw that. It was me, Abe Froman, and Ben P.
Midnight showing.
There was gas passed around.
There was gas passed around. We were like sniffing the gas.
Probably
like,
one of the worst.
So you guys were at
midnight showings.
You were at the Burbank 16.
We were at the Burbank 16.
One of our readers joined us as well.
Yep.
It was awkward from the second we got in line. Till Ben P going into the wrong theater.
They sold me a ticket, and I bought a ticket for the 12:05 showing, not knowing that you guys were in the 12:01 showing.
Because I came from
West Hollywood, and I like barely got there. And then I'm like, where the hell are you guys? Like, what's going on? But I got in there right before the movie started, like at the end of the Avatar trailer. So
technically, you broke the law going into the wrong theater.
Yep.
Right. It's all right. So Abe and I get there, you know, we see this line, we're passing through this line, and this is like, we go to midnight shows all the time at this theater, and this was not the usual suspects, right? This crowd of people that we were passing was just a totally different type of audience.
It's so weird.
That we aren't used to seeing at the midnight shows.
There are kids there. There are kids at the screening.
I know.
This is a school night.
It's like it's Thursday night. So that was kind of weird, seeing just a new, different type of audience, I guess.
Wait.
Is
the movie so terrible that you guys are only talking about your theater experience?
It's all part of the experience.
So, because it's after... Okay, so we wait in line, we get in the theater, we sit down, and right before the movie starts, the smell starts to, like, just come on up around us. This smoky fog of...
I think you bring up a good point, though, that the kind of theater-going experience was like the story that we're telling as opposed to 2012. You know, this is evidenced by the fact that 2012 has little to no story. I mean, it was totally ridiculous. Like, we all know what we're getting with the Roland Emmerich movie. Like, we're signed up for it. We've all seen Independence Day and probably liked it. I don't know if I can speak for everybody here when I say that.
I think we all enjoyed Independence Day.
So, like, you know, everybody's kind of hoping for another one of those kinds of movies. And it was just, I mean, it was nothing like that, obviously. But, like, I don't want an intellectual film when I'm looking at 2012. But for God's sake, explain something. Like, it was, yeah.
There were so many, like, plot devices and themes that kept reoccurring, and is just absurd. like how they just narrowly escape every single time.
Everything is, the world is crumbling behind them the whole time.
It's around them.
It's like,
so the world isn't crumbling at the same time everywhere.
No, they're on a street, they're driving, and it's crumbling on both sides of the road. But the road that they're on is perfectly like untouched.
Okay, so are you saying John Cusack is the bringer of death in 2012? I mean, is the wave of death following him?
It's like it's like the 2012 prophecy was trying to murder John Cusack's character. And John Cusack kept escaping.
Yeah, it was like he was in a Final Destination movie or something.
The chosen one.
In Mickman's review, he's like, they had to spoon feed you all the information every 10 minutes. It's true. They're like, there's a scene.
They treat the audience like they're stupid.
They treat the audience like it's a freaking morning. By the way, we're going to explain
what's happening right now that you're seeing on the screen while it's happening.
And there were only a couple like really laugh out loud moments at the entire theater. Erupted. I mean, the rest of the time, our kind of group was laughing.
We're laughing because it was so bad.
Yeah.
I was laughing at Danny Glover's lisp most of the time. It was awful. Like, is that dude, seriously, has that guy had a stroke recently or something? Like, he didn't sound like that in the Lethal Weapon movies. And I saw Shooter, the Mark Wahlberg movie a while ago, and he was really bad in that, too.
I'm getting too old for this.
It didn't help because, like, they had, you know, he's the president. He's supposed to be taken very seriously and have, like, this heavy kind of dialogue. It's almost like they didn't realize that he had this lisp, and they were, like, the first, like, real monologue that he had, like, seven words in a row started with the letter S, and he was just like, it was freaking, like, Sylvester or whatever the Looney Tunes character was that suffered
Did anyone give, like, one of those inspirational Roland Emmerich movie speeches in this?
At the very end.
Yeah, at the very end.
Adrian, that guy. I remember. Was he standing on a hill or something?
He was video conferencing with everybody. with other ships.
That's how they got in the new angle of video conferences.
Yeah. Updated.
It was so funny. We kind of talked about this like right after we watched the movie, but like in Inglourious Basterds, they really cast really well. Like if someone's supposed to be German, they cast German actors who can already speak French, and they do it really well. In this, all the American people, aside from like John Cusack and Amanda Peet, they're all like English actors. Other people, and they're all like American actors doing these awful accents. Like, Sweden agrees with you. We want to. You're like, what are you doing? It's so bad. You're just like, why can't you just cast? They're not big roles, not pivotal roles. Yeah. Just cast someone from there who can do a convincing accent. They don't. They cast the worst people. These little bit roles, bad.
I was a little disappointed. Needless to say,
even Woody Harrelson is kind of not really fun to watch.
He wasn't. You know, they tried to make let's make him be a comic relief guy. You know,
Okay. Well, let's talk about the real reason anyone's watching this film is the special effects. Were they pulled off? Was there enough? Were they justifiable?
The first half was a lot, I think, a lot better than the
more
last
impressive.
Half. Yeah, it's definitely more impressive than the
all
last
the little
half
details,
of the movie.
Seeing people just eat it, man. You know, it's like these huge
and watching the limo like jump into a crashing building that's tumbling down and driving through that building.
Yeah,
it was cool for me because I just moved here to LA, and like sitting in a theater in LA and watching LA like kind of get destroyed was kind of cool, like just seeing all the landmarks and stuff. But
and they do destroy the landmarks. They even cut away in news things. It's like, and this video footage came from Brazil.
It's like stock footage.
Yeah.
Of, you know, the turnaround of the, you know, the statue. You know what that's called? Because I don't know what that's called.
Not
anyway,
sure.
You know the statue on the hill, right?
Touchdown Jesus.
Touchdown Jesus, yeah. So, you know, they do the roundabout shot. But this time the roundabout shot was of it crumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
The second half basically just turned into Poseidon 2. And they were like, there's a bunch of water on the ship.
No.
I am so thankful because I was so afraid that it was going to cut to like, you know, a year later or whatever, and the water recedes and they land on a mountaintop and there was going to be a rainbow and a white dove. I'm so glad they didn't do that, though. I thought that was going to happen.
That's what the sequel TV show is for, man.
That's right.
There's a TV show. I think I saw that.
Yeah.
I don't know any details.
Yeah. 2013.
Yeah, we talked about that, I think, that last podcast. He's making, 2013.
He's actually Roland Emmerich?
He's him and the writer of 2012 like, left it open for that, and they had ideas for what happened after, but they didn't want to go into it in the movie. They didn't have enough time during the magnificent setup.
It was 2.5 hours long, yeah. too. It's not like, dude, you know, for a movie like this, exactly. you would expect it to be kind of short and, like, get to the point quickly, but yeah. they kind of dragged it out for this.
Yeah. We had some clips that circulated of just the performers in these weird rigs and without all the special effects. And we've also seen the stuff in the trailers where it's all integrated together. Does it really feel like the actors are integrated into the movie the way they are, saying, Children of Men?
Well, it's like...
Not,
at, well,
the
no.
not even close together. To Children of Men. Oh. Not
it's
that.
Just literally like, ooh, cut, we're inside cut. A studio box.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was.
Totally.
I think the kind of cool parts is when you see the point of view from, like, let's say they're in a plane, the view outside looking at the destruction, that's kind of cool. But yeah, cutting from that going to the plane is just like you're in a studio. Come on.
The movie was so bad though; it was hilarious.
Yeah,
I couldn't help. I think
funny.
We laughed all the way through it.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. Crazy white people.
I'm pretty sure I've watched every single film somehow of his. I've even seen 10,000 BC for some reason.
I didn't even.
Even when I knew it was bad, I'm gonna watch this eventually.
When you told me that you watched it, I was like, well, I'll watch it. So I watched it and I was so disappointed.
It was a crappy film.
Mazer, man, you're bringing Venkman down.
I know, dude. So
bad. I said it was bad.
Do you think out of all of them. That's true, you did. Out of all of Roland Emmerich's films, what do you think his worst film was? Out of all of them. And remind you, The Day After Tomorrow was about a bunch of people trying to run away from the cold.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty...
You know what's funny, though, is I somewhat cared about the characters in The Day After Tomorrow. I was kind of more invested in that. In 2012, there's so much bullcrap going on that you just don't buy any of it, and you hate every character.
I'll, like, get on board.
Genuinely, every character you go...
You're right.
I want you to die. Please die. Please die now.
It was like in Day After Tomorrow, they built like these family relationships and they actually, I mean, yeah, like you said, they actually kind of meant something. And in 2012, they had families, but they were like thrown together as like a last minute thing. Yeah. They were like, oh, let's use this because it's a gimmick of having this family try to get together or something. Like, it felt very forced and just weird.
I can go with that.
You know, for me, I haven't seen 2012 yet. For me, the most disappointing film, I'd say, just because of my expectations, having seen Independence Day, was Godzilla. Because it was Godzilla.
Oh, that's right.
It was the film right after. It thought, you know, you had all this hype for it, and it just was...
I think the Wallflowers music video for We Can Be Heroes was better than the movie.
Yeah.
Which is basically intercut clips of the movie. The best of clips.
Is the only thing good about 2012 the Avatar trailer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it was funny.
If you're gonna see the movie, you gotta go in with an open mind, thinking that this is gonna be so stupid, I have to enjoy it.
Yeah, and go with people. Like, it's no fun sitting there by yourself, like, laughing at this stuff, because people around you will most likely be taking it seriously, as evidenced by the $65 million that it made.
Hey, this is the end of the world here.
I think it's gonna take a huge drop, though. Second week?
Yeah.
Enough people are going to be like, hey, this is
maybe
stupid.
Yeah. Just because there's not that many movies out right now.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Twilight New Moon's coming out. Oh, well. That'll knock it off.
God help us all.
the real end of the world.
Venkman saw Precious over the weekend as well.
I did see Precious.
So it's a nice date night with your wife.
I just, well, here's
let's go see this. Let's
here's
go see this
happened.
Movie that'll bum us out for the next week or so.
Well, don't touch me.
Don't
touch
me. Ever.
We got there and I asked my wife, Pirate Radio, or do we want to see Precious? I've heard both are good.
But Pirate Radio looks like an awesome time.
It does, right? So this is what I did, though. I said, I tweeted, you know, our Twitter followers. I said, hey, should I go see Precious or should I go see Pirate Radio? And everyone was like, go see Precious. The movie is amazing. Go see it. And I was like, wow.
It's just a big joke.
It was a pretty strong response, right?
We're going to get
so I went.
go rent Weekend at Bernie's again. Go see it. Tweet it. Retweet. Was it worth checking out, though?
So I went and saw it. Yes, it was worth checking out. It was a great film. It really was, but really freaking bummed you out, man.
Oh, yeah.
It was a total just...
We talked about the plot before.
Yeah, we did talk about the plot. And it's such a heavy movie. And
those are good every once in a while.
It is good. It'll probably be nominated for an Oscar. It probably have a few actors in it that will get nominated. Mariah Carey was in it. Couldn't really even tell it was her, you know, because they had to make her ugly, I guess.
Quote unquote. You did some hand quotes there.
No, she really did a great job in it. That's this thing. Everybody in this film was great. Everyone did a perfect performance. So it's just the story is so heavy, and it makes you everything that could possibly go wrong to this girl, the main character, Precious, happens to this girl. Every worst possible scenario. Spoiler alert.
I think it says in the plot what. You
know, okay.
Well, you go even further.
I'm gonna take it even a step further. Okay. Okay. So first of all, her mother is abusive. Physically and emotionally. Throw in whatever you want to call it. Vasaz. At her head, you know, breaking stuff over her, punching her, pushing her down physically, and then just beating her down with words, telling her that she wished that she would have had her aborted, and that she never wanted her, and that she ruined her life. And it's just that. It's just like, and the way it is, it's so mean and so awful that it's like, this is terrible. What mother could do that to their child? Then there's the whole thing where Precious had two children. By her father, because her father raped her. The mother was jealous that the father wanted her daughter. It's one of the reasons why she was abusive towards her. And that her children should have been her mom's children.
This is all kinds of messed up.
Dude, it's like seriously jacked up, man. You know, and so there's like that whole thing there. On top of that, you find out later in the movie, spoiler alert, everybody, if you're going to go see it, finds out that the father had AIDS. Oh. So the daughter at the end finds out she is HIV positive, and
she's not having an easy go.
And it's just like everything that hits this poor kid, one after another, just beating the world is just beating down on this kid. But she finds a place, and she finds people that help her get through it, you know? It leaves you with an uplifting feeling, but at the same time, you're still so bummed out.
I can tell because you're crouching down as you go, you're uplifting?
Uplifting!
So Venkman puts his hand up, but crouches down.
It's a very Shakespearean moment. Yeah.
It's about as bummed out as you would have gone into it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
it all takes place late November 2012. So, around the corner.
We know what's up in the future.
At the very end of the movie, you know, the earth just kind of starts crumbling. She's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's just, you don't need to see it in the theater. You can rent it if you want to be bummed out at home. If you want to be bummed out in the theater, go ahead and see it. But no matter what, this movie is going to bum you out, and you are going to probably cry. No, I won't lie. This is a tearjerker.
I have a question. This movie has so much bad stuff. Is it manipulative or is it genuine?
Is it just throwing all this stuff at you just to try to get that emotional?
It seems
stuff at you?
Well, the thing is this girl's life. It seems like that's her life. It's not like it's thrown at you. Like this is the situation she was put in.
She's also illiterate too, right?
Yeah, that's right. She can't read. Oh, and obviously, you know, one of her kids has Down syndrome, so she's got that going.
Obviously. The other kid just a nose. That's all the kid.
How old are her kids in the movie?
She just gave birth to the second one.
Yeah, in the movie, the second one was born in the movie on the screen, and then the other one was like I think three. Wow. So, yeah, pretty crazy.
Thank you, Harpo.
Yeah.
Sorry to bum y'all out.
Okay, cool. Moving on. Prisoner premiered Sunday. I caught two episodes. Ben P. caught up on one. Everyone else?
Nope.
I've seen ads.
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, this is a show based on it's like a remake of the 60s show. I was going to watch the original when I heard about them doing this remake, and I watched, like, the first part of one of the episodes, and it's, like, so old school that I was like, you know, I'm just going to hold off and, like, wait. I don't know. It just didn't seem to have, like, that that spark that, you know, would keep my attention. I mean, I think we're in like a golden age of TV right now. There's so much good stuff
Definitely.
So it's hard to kind of get started on something else when you've got all this good stuff that's on the horizon or whatever. But this Prisoner, I mean, I only got through on my way over here. I was watching the first one, and
that's dangerous, dude.
not on my way over here. Right before I left to come here, I was watching the first one. Thank you for pointing that out. So yeah, it stars Jim Caviezel and Ian McKellen. It's got a very kind of Lost vibe, I think, and it's like Jim Caviezel wakes up in this place called The Village, and he has no idea what's happened to him or how he's gotten there, and Ian McKellen is kind of like the ruler per se of this village, and kind of tries to like brainwash him into thinking that there's nothing outside of this place. And you want to take over, since you've seen more of it than I have, but
no. Well, something I want to add to that is, by next week we're going to have 5 episodes that we've already gone through. Is this a miniseries?
I think it's done on Tuesday.
On Tuesday?
I think there's only 6 episodes total. Because I was looking that up. Okay. Yeah, because with the budget and the amount of work that's gone into this advertising campaign, I was thinking it would be more of like a 10-hour thing or something. Like, yeah. It seems to me like they spent a lot of money promoting this. And I looked that up the other day, and they're doing 2-hour blocks on AMC Sunday night, Monday night, and Tuesday night. And I think that's it. Unless I'm mistaken. I don't know. That's what I read. But
yeah, it ends Tuesday.
So that seems like a lot of money being spent for something that's not really that long in context of a miniseries. But
and what I've seen of the 2 hours, I'm completely confused about what's going on.
So maybe it's hard
to know if these are you see past memories, and everyone has a feeling that they were from somewhere else. I don't know if this is in a situation where, I mean, there's so many things you could pull up from now where, you have a bunch of theories. I never saw the original series, so I have no idea how it ends in that series.
Would it have been better as a full-on series as opposed to a miniseries?
I think it would have lacked. They give you a lot in these 2 hours. It's just the world is so deep, and for you to get how deep the confusion of everyone, I think you have to have it in a miniseries.
I'm confused why Magneto would kidnap John Stockton in the first place.
There's a lot of situations where people are remembering stuff outside the village, but they don't know why. But there's also a situation where he's remembering things in the village that he's never seen before. So it's a situation where memories are starting to blur together from someone else or his true self, or who knows what it all is. There is a plot point. It's not really a spoiler. Previous to being in the village, he would work in a room. They don't show it, but basically he just watches closed-circuit televisions all day and just monitors people.
When does it take place?
They don't even allude to when.
It takes place in 2012.
They don't allude to when. They do have those iconic white balls from the original series, and you see 93 in the original black suit with the white line around the collar and all that stuff. You do get some of that. But other than that, I mean, visually, this is, I don't even know where they shot it. It's a really unique looking place, but
Africa.
I'm definitely going to stick around for it now, especially realizing that it's only going to be 6 hours long. Watching the first part of it, you're like, all right, I'm already in, you know, like, I got to see how this ends.
No,
so
I wonder if this is similar to what they did with Battlestar, where it was a miniseries to test the waters to see if they should do a series.
Right.
Or if this is going to give us the answers that we're looking for. Because this does have an episodic feel, but you don't know how or where it's going to go. Doesn't really follow a structure that...
Well, AMC's been putting out some pretty good content over the past couple of years, so
yeah.
They're, like, turning into, like, one of the power players in the cable scene right now, so,
yeah.
I mean, it could very much be, a test-in-the-waters type of situation for them.
Yeah. It's just, it's so out there, I think that's the reason they're probably testing it. Now, performances from Jim Caviezel and Ian McKellen, awesome. Caviezel's performance is so interesting, and it's so... I mean, how did they get these guys into a TV series?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
He's so underrated. Like, even in, like, Deja Vu, he had a really small role, but, like, he was one of the better parts of that movie, you know? Like, he brings such a gravitas to everything. Like, he's so serious and so, like, intense with everything that he does.
And even though he's questioning his own sanity, and sometimes you might be questioning his, you're with him. which is interesting. I don't think other actors would be able to pull that off. Mm. So we're just going to have to probably wait till next week, till the answers are out, to find out.
So another thing that came out this past week was two trailers that we kind of wanted to talk about for just a second. Clash of the Titans, which directed by Louis Leterrier, who did The Incredible Hulk last year, and Prince of Persia, which is directed by Mike Newell, and it's the Jake Gyllenhaal movie. The
Jerry Bruckheimer crazy big action event.
Yeah. So obviously, I don't know. What do you guys think about these two trailers? Like, they came out within a day of each other, maybe even on the same day or something. So it's hard not to compare them, both being kind of like set in the distant past, like almost sword and sandal epic type things.
I was a bit more blown away by the Clash of Titans stuff. As much as I don't like the rock music, and I know it's not going to be in the movie.
Right, yeah.
Just how much it pumps you up to see that kind of action, you know? Yeah. I really like that. And I never really gotten into playing Prince of Persia, but mm-hmm. I've been keeping up on all the movie stuff coming out. It looks good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
For me, Clash of the Titans, I think it has a great visual update to the old movie.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the shots I saw in the trailer didn't leave me too excited. There was this one wirework shot where Sam Worthington is jumping up in the air, and he's just kind of holding this weird pose. It just felt
so... Oh, I know what you're talking about. It looked like Brad Pitt and Troy, where he does like
exactly.
that jump stab into the dive into the guy's neck.
Well, the stuff in Troy, like that stuff had a lot of like weight and just a lot of power to it.
Yeah, that one, it was just like you could tell he was winced up on a wire and just holding it.
Yeah.
And that was all. But it was cool. Liam Neeson as Zeus.
Yeah.
It's one little shot, and I'm like, I wish they had a better one where it wasn't so blurry, because it's pretty badass.
Or like him freaking throwing a lightning bolt or doing something cool. He just like slams his hand down.
The sword fighting was cool. I mean, it looked like it was really well done. For Prince of Persia, I think visually it is on a different... it's got a lot more polish. I mean, it's a Bruckheimer film.
Yeah,
there's
totally.
A lot more stuff in it. Not super excited for Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't think a lot of people are. For me, I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like if you're going to have Prince of Persia, could he be a Persian? Would this be wrong?
Yeah, totally.
I think obviously they're going for what they feel that they can sell to American audiences.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, I mean, yeah, when that casting announcement came out, like, people kind of got in a little uproar about that, like how ridiculous it was, like, having Joel, and not to mention the fact that when you watch the actual trailer, it's like everybody speaking in a British accent and stuff, so it's like, it's kind of ridiculous on the face
of
it.
When they were talking about who was to cast, I forgot who it was, but there was an actual guy they were talking about who is an actual Persian prince who is an actor and who looks like the guy in the video game. So it's like, why in the world did you guys do this?
Yeah.
But obviously Hollywood and tradition has cast a bunch of white people.
Well, over the past year, they've shown set photos and stuff, and I was a little worried seeing these pictures of Gyllenhaal, but I'm going to be honest, like, I think it looks like he can kind of pull off the physicality of what is required in the movie, like, just from the little bit that we saw in the trailer, it looks like, it's not like, oh god, that's clearly a stuntman or something like that, you know, it really looks like he actually put on a good bit of muscle and is really doing these things.
And it's something I think they did a great job with. I don't know if it's green screen with actual acrobats, or
the
if it's just,
climbing
well,
you're talking about, or?
Yeah, there's stuff where it's just like, You can kind of tell what someone's physical limitations are.
Right.
And sometimes when they do these films where you have someone do these acrobatic moves and they sometimes do them in CG, it's just so over-the-top ridiculous that it's not believable.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no weight to it. You just kind of see this, like, it's basically this...
Yeah, it's like a little
thing,
globe, like, just, like, flying around.
Which they do very well in Spider-Man, where even though he's as flexible as he is, there's still weight to his body. Mm-hmm.
Gravity still works in the same way.
Gravity still works. He's using webs and all stuff. And I think in this, from what I saw from the trailer, he's not doing impossible moves. The timing is the ridiculous part, but it's the moves that are not. You know, the flip and all that kind of stuff. Also, for those who've played the game, it's like looks like they just ditched the look of one and just went with two. Prince of Persia 2 is like the Dark Prince, and something else we came across when we were looking up on IMDb, the same lead female character. How do we pronounce her name?
It's like Gemma Arterton or Gemma, one of the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's in both movies. That's pretty ridiculous.
And she looks pretty different in each one.
Yeah, she had a really, really small role in Quantum of Solace, the Bond movie, and she was the one who got, well... I don't know, I'm not going to give away what happens to her, but she was a really small role.
She didn't live to see the credits.
But yeah, I think I was a little bit more impressed with the Prince of Persia trailer than Clash of the Titans. And, you know, to be fair, Clash of the Titans, I don't think there was like two sentences of dialogue in that, so that we didn't really get a good idea of like the story and stuff. And I mean, most of us probably have seen the original, the stop motion stuff, and that was pretty awesome. But like this
claymation,
it, you know, Sam Worthington didn't get to say anything, if my memory serves me correctly, and it was just a lot of action stuff, which is cool. And I feel like it really kind of encapsulates what a teaser trailer is supposed to be. Like,
oh, yeah.
It, you know,
yeah.
It's just our first look at it. It's not something to really judge the whole movie on.
Yeah, you were trying to judge a teaser trailer versus a trailer.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Just look at the response of the Avatar teaser trailer to when the actual trailer came out.
Yeah, totally.
How people were just... The first teaser, it was like... They picked the worst parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, it looks like they picked some of the most awesome parts.
Yeah.
Looks really cool, but what you're talking about, Jake Gyllenhaal being in Prince of Persia, like the casting's kind of puzzling. Venkman posted a little article today about how Hollywood doesn't need to cast these A-list actors in these parts anymore, and as evidence from all the biggest bombs of this year and some of the biggest hits, the difference is A-list actors were in the biggest bombs,
right?
And there were like no-name actors in the biggest hits. You know, take. For example,
District 9,
The Hangover, Paranormal Activity. Those were all some of the biggest hits. Star Trek as well.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek, you had a lot of familiar faces, but definitely not, you know, the big, big name actors. But
well, it wasn't like Chris Pine, Star Trek,
Chris right?
Pine. Or
Chris Pine is Kirk in Star Trek,
or Zachary Quinto. It doesn't have that allure.
No, and then you look at some of the biggest bombs. You look at Funny People, which was good, but didn't do well in theaters.
Right.
Or you look at Will Ferrell's Land of the Lost, Eddie Murphy's Imagine That, Julia Roberts' Duplicity. These are all huge named actors that get ridiculous paychecks. Everything that Venkman says in his article, I agree with that. It's about the story.
I wonder how much of that has to do with like Star Trek and The Hangover. I'm thinking of specifically being geared towards more of like an ensemble cast, like having that play up as the main deal, as opposed to relying on one person to sell it. Like, I wonder if that, you know, translates into like people are like, okay, I don't really care about that particular star, so I'm not going to go see that movie. Whereas if they have an ensemble cast, they're like, okay, well, there's a bunch of different people interacting here. It's not like we're going to have to sit through 2 hours of Julia Roberts or something. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not the Tom Cruise show.
Right.
Also, I'm wondering how much the trailers are taking precedence in these films. I know everyone in the movie theater is a movie critic when they're watching a trailer.
Yeah. Right.
You hear people yell stuff out like, stupid!
Yeah.
Or people like applaud
for
something that's really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's a factor. Because you just named off those movies. Land of the Lost, I saw the trailer, I was like, I could care less.
Right, yeah.
Every single one of those movies that had a star that bombed was like, I mean, the trailers gave you a good sense of what's going to be in it, and it was something that I did not care about.
Right.
But these other films, Hangover, trailer was funny.
Yeah.
You just watch the different trailers and get, so many cool moments out of it.
Star Trek, awesome. I mean,
totally.
There are girls I know who don't even know Star Trek, who didn't care, but like, that looked cool.
Yeah.
And they wanted to see it. So, I mean, is it just trailers?
Well, we also, just a couple weeks ago, there was a little story on the amount of trailer views online as opposed to box office take.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually pretty alarming that a lot of the ones that get viewed the most, like, Megan Fox and Jennifer's Body, that was one of the most viewed trailers, and it just completely tanked. And you look at, like, Law Abiding Citizen, which only had like maybe a few hundred thousand views on it, and that took in way more, for that kind of weekend kind of area.
Yeah, but just based on that, I think Jennifer's Body is going to do well on DVD, but not so well in theaters.
Office,
I think people just were like, they're watching it, and then when it was, I think it just came out on the Twitterverse of just like, she doesn't get naked, and didn't care.
I think the trailer thing is, it's more relevant to people like us who are constantly keeping up with movie stuff and online all the time. A lot of, like you were saying with Law Abiding Citizen, a lot of couples and, people our parents' age or whatever, they just go to the movie, and like high school kids, they just go to the movies, like they don't even know what they're going to see beforehand. a lot of it has to do with that, I think, where they're just like, okay, let's pick this or let's do that or something. So I think that plays into it a little bit at least, but...
I'm trying to think of I was trying to think of an exception to the rule, but I thought Will Smith for a second, but I was like, wait, 7 pounds. I was like, there's really no actor who has...
Yeah, Will Smith's the most bankable actor in Hollywood, even he's not completely
he's not
infallible.
Just another thing for television, producer Leonard Goldberg, he's the one who kind of launched all these TV series with Aaron Spelling back in the day. He helped launch Fantasy Island and Charlie's Angels and 90210. 90210 is getting, you know, it's doing pretty well on CW with its kind of reboot. Melrose Place not doing so hot. We all know Knight Rider didn't do so hot.
Oh, man.
Bionic Woman, which was, production value was all right, but, you know, compared to Knight Rider, but
right.
Just didn't do well.
There was no story there.
No story, but Goldberg, he's going to do a relaunch of Charlie's Angels, a new TV series, and Drew Barrymore, who starred in the 2000 remake and its sequel, she's going to be one of the producers.
I feel like they've already tried to remake this a few times on some other networks with some...
She Spies, right? Do you remember that, Ben?
Very vaguely, yeah.
It was a huge hit. Like,
it was on forever.
It was on for a long time. Those low-budget kind of shows that...
Yeah.
I don't see it being beyond that, because in what situation are these... attractive women.
I mean, it's such a cliche now. It's not even like, how can you revive something like that, especially with it being brought back into kind of the public consciousness over the past couple of years with these remakes and stuff, like these big budget movies. And those, talk about movie stars, like those movies were filled with cameos and like these huge name actors. So it's not like people have forgotten about Charlie's Angels and like they're like, oh,
Farrah
wow,
Fawcett,
it's coming back.
It was also back in the news just because, you know, Farrah Fawcett died this year, and it's like, oh, Charlie's Angel star, Farrah Fawcett.
Right.
And, I don't know, yeah, like, I think the only thing I'd be excited for, wouldn't it be cool if it was a Charlie's Angel animated show, kind of in the same vein as, like, the Powderpuff Girls? You know? Like, something that kind of style, or the style of those Esurance commercials.
Oh,
something
yeah.
like that. Where it was, like, a Saturday morning cartoon where it'll sell a buttload of merchandise for little girls and dolls.
Cause,
yeah,
you know, not
a
TV
show.
There's no gravity or weight to... that you're going to bring into it, but allow the world to be believable.
Right.
Because it's not believable.
Yeah, so you might as well gear it towards girls and give them, like, a good role model.
Or you
and
can
stuff
roll
like
it
that.
Back
like
in time.
Kids,
you said it in the 70s. It's still going to be really weird.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work. I don't see it surviving beyond this.
And, like, Life on Mars, I think, that ABC show was set in the 80s, and that, or 70s was it?
70s,
yeah, and that got canceled after, what, 2 seasons or something? So, I mean, it's not like that's a... That's like a dead-on way to ensure success, you know. Like, I don't know, but like I feel like there's so many variations on Charlie's Angels out there already. Like, did you guys see Debs the movie? It's definitely worth watching. It's about like it's like an all-girl team of spies, and so it's pretty ridiculous. Check it out.
The only show I think who has the tone that can they could try to match is Chuck, but even Chuck doesn't.
That's what I put my article.
I love Chuck. But as far as the ratings go, I mean, it's been trying really hard to get an audience.
Chuck has these really good,
it's a great
geek sensibilities, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it really taps into that those hardcore geeks and it has the hot girl. This one, it's like three girls, and you're going to have to kind of round out the cast with all these kind of geek characters that will maybe be behind them or something like that. But
or the villain of the week.
Yeah.
Right? That's what these episodes are about.
Yeah.
I don't think
or something like Alias, even, like a few years ago, female-centric spy show, you know, where it has that kind of familiar cast around her.
Man, you stretch that to three.
Right, yeah. It's just going to seem bogged down, I think.
Yeah, it won't be nearly as believable as that. Just knowing the other stuff that Goldberg has produced, you know, the kind of CW stuff that you're like, okay, it's going to get really low-budget action kind of stuff. It's gonna
and
be
there's, so, like, I think Smallville, you can get away with that.
Yeah.
They try to
because it's based in a comic world.
Yeah,
like,
it's based in a comic world.
Another thing Goldberg is doing, another revamp of a Aaron Spelling show that he helped produce, is Fantasy Island. Except this won't be a drama or won't. It's gonna be a reality show.
No, you gotta be kidding me. Are you serious?
No, it's gonna be a reality show. And Mark Burnett, who produced The Survivor and The Apprentice, he's the big wig
of reality TV.
Yeah, he's helping launch.
He's had a few bombs though.
Yeah, but he's going to help launch Fantasy Island, and you just know they're going to have some midget guy as a little sidekick.
Yeah,
it's going to be weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll really do that. Like, I wonder, I really do. Like, how little, ethical standards does reality TV shows have?
Well, like, I don't know how much of a...
These things are so cheap to make, it's like, this thing could run forever as long as it's just a little bit of an audience.
Yeah. That's a problem. That is a problem.
Some of the movies coming out next week, we have Redcliffe, which is the biggest budgeted, highest grossing film of China, directed by John Woo.
I'm tempted to buy this on Blu-ray on Amazon. I saw it.
That's we were actually.
Did you see the movie or did you just see the deal on Amazon?
No, you can buy it.
You can buy
straight
it, right?
Buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, so it's being released in theaters, which I'm sure will be nice, you know, for people who don't have a nice little Blu-ray collection or
right.
have that nice big screen to go see this movie, which the action is just epic in it. For those of you who are just like, you know, I'm going to own it anyway, I might as well just kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
You can buy it on Amazon.
Now, this is only part one.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's part one of, like, two or something, I think.
For anyone who's any video game players out there, Red Cliff is basically a movie version of Dynasty Warriors. I don't know if you ever played Dynasty Warriors, but it's you just go around killing people for hours and hours. And
it's based on like a historical.
Yeah, it's all based. It's based on the same events. Red Cliff is based on the same events.
Yeah,
that Dynasty
it's based
Warriors
on the same
is.
Events.
Cool.
So yeah, also coming out is the animated pick Planet 51, which stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Hey, have you guys observed? When you're listening to it, did they pitch his voice up for Planet 51?
It doesn't sound like him.
It
really.
Doesn't sound like him.
Yeah.
You can hear it a little bit, but it's like pitched up.
It might be that, or you know, maybe
he's doing a voice.
He's doing a voice. Yeah, okay. I don't know, it's weird not seeing his face.
And then
steer clear.
A movie we're trying to
steer clear, gentlemen.
Most anticipated in the female world.
Yeah, this is a movie. It's broken records for most pre-sale tickets sold. I think something like 1,300 showings have already sold out for the Twilight Saga New Moon. So if you want to watch some malnourished dudes glittering and some underaged werewolves with their shirts off for half the movies.
Taking steroids.
You can go see Twilight New Moon.
It's funny, the guy who plays Jacob, he wasn't huge in the last one, but they were thinking of casting someone else.
Yeah.
He just got huge out of nowhere.
Yeah, he basically
turned
into a gym rat. He's 17 years old now, so he's probably like 16 when he had to yoke himself out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like they're like, yeah, basically they're like, we're gonna cast someone else unless you get big, because you're gonna spend you know half the movie with your shirt off in this next film. So.
Well, that's the thing is, like, everybody was always like, wow, how do these actors all... I'm like, that's their job. Like, they have nothing else to do.
Yeah,
they just sit around every day, all day, and, like, work out or do whatever they need to do to get in shape.
Read
so
lines,
it's not...
work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when people get pretty buff or whatever for roles, I don't really care. It's when people, like, have to, like, gain weight, you know, for
like
roles.
That Christian Bale thing
like
a few
Christian
years ago.
Yeah, we've talked about this for a long time. You know, he went from... The Machinist to
Batman
Begins, he had to gain 100 pounds going from Machinist, and he almost died. And then he lost a bunch of weight for...
Rescue Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
And then
he came back for Dark Knight. Yeah, he lost a bunch of weight for The Fighter. And
man, that dude.
Think about his wife. Like, half the year, she's getting, you know... She's making love to Bruce Wayne. And then the other half, making love to Skeletor, you know?
Emaciated.
And then, like, you know, Jared Leto having to put on all that weight for that John Lennon.
Which just, like, blinked into theaters and
it
was gone.
How much does that suck for him? Just, like, I gained all that weight. I spent, you know, a year of my life overweight.
Looking at his paycheck, he's probably like, it was totally worth it.
Yeah,
but...
Ninja Assassin and The Road come out the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, The Road, you can read...
Princess and the Frog.
Oh, very nice.
Yep.
Be a lot of movies to watch that.
So Princess and the Frog is Disney's return to hand-drawn 2D animation. And we've all been kind of looking forward to that. I think we've all...
Yeah.
It's a welcome back. They introduced their first African-American princess after 1,000 years of Disney being around.
Too little too late? I don't know.
they're tossing people a bone, I guess.
They're trying.
They're
trying.
Give them that.
Well, maybe we'll hit on the next podcast, but Ninja Assassin...
have you guys seen? Do you know anything about Tony Jaa? Do you guys know?
Yeah.
Did you know that Ong Bak 2 is out in limited release right now? Like, have you seen?
I thought it was.
They've been advertising that thing for like a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, all over the web, there's been like posts over the past year of Ong Bak 2 and like Tony Jaa fighting like a live alligator and all these really ridiculous
jumping
clips.
Off elephants.
I saw it a couple weeks ago over in West Hollywood, and it is amazing. It's the best like martial arts action movie I've ever seen.
Wow,
and watching that and then seeing trailers for Ninja Assassin. Assassin, you're like, Ninja Assassin is nothing. Like, wow. Because...
It's all special
effects. Yeah, yeah. Ninja Assassin is nothing but, like, slow motion, like, ridiculous CGI, stuff like that. And from... Ong Bak 2 is all real. Yeah. Like, it's a Thailand... based in Thailand, I think.
Did you see the first Ong Bak?
Yeah.
Well, this one is, like, in...
It's a prequel. It has nothing to do with the original Ong Bak. If you haven't seen, and you can get it on Comcast, like on demand and stuff, at your house right now. I think it's still available. So for like $10 or something, it's totally worth it. Like highly, highly recommended. You guys should definitely check it out.
Very, very cool. Yeah, we kind of just lost track of it. I mean,
I was looking forward to this film. I forgot that it was out.
Yeah. Early on, we kind of broke a lot of news that. The production was in crazy trouble.
Oh, yeah. He disappeared into the jungle for a while.
He pulled a Chappelle, you know? Like, because he wasn't just starring it this time around. Like, he directed mm-hmm. and produced, and, like,
yep.
the budget just inflated, and he just disappeared.
Yeah, I think he lost some financing, and, like, the pressure just got to him. And he, like, they issued a news report or something, and he was missing for, like, 2 months or something, and, like, just came back out, and he was like, all right, it's all good. His mentor, the guy who directed The Protector, I think, kind of came in and, like, helped him finish the movie, like, while he was gone or whatever. But it's, I mean... watching the movie, you can't. There's no trace of any like production troubles at all.
That's
like,
what I kind of worry about. I'm like, there's no way that they after all that they pulled it all together to make it seem seamless. And...
It ends with a cliffhanger because Ong Bak 3 is currently filming, but it's
is he directing again?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
or co-directing at least. But yeah, it's
that's a lot of pressure. Starring and directing
for a movie of that scale with that kind of. Groundbreaking action, and definitely is.
I mean, Jackie Chan does it. I mean,
yeah.
And the thing with
a year, pretty much for.
for a long time. The thing with Tony Jaa, it's like he does all this amazing stuff, and it seems like every movie he's trying to top himself. He doesn't get complacent about his stunts or anything. Like he's always, it seems like he's very cognizant of. Okay, I did this awesome thing in this last movie. Let's see if we can make it even cooler in the next one. Like,
how's the story in 2?
It's set in like, you know, 1300s or something really ridiculous. It's your standard orphan whose parents are killed, raised by assassins, goes back for revenge. Pretty much the same plot as Ninja Assassin. But like the action is just, it's mind blowing. Like he fights a dude on top of a live elephant. Like it's like stuff that you've just never seen before.
Well,
like,
stuff they wouldn't get away with in America.
Right? Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
All the animalized people would be on their
asses. Oh, totally, totally. Yeah.
And then the stunt corner would be freaking out because you can't control an elephant.
No.
Yeah, it's
as
amazing.
As much as you can try to.
Yeah.
All right, so next week we will probably, hopefully, have already seen Fantastic Mr. Fox. Join us next week.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter for all the box office predictions and numbers. Be sure to check out EMH's podcasts that are up on the site and the little blue box podcast section. Leave all your rant backs in the rant back section below this podcast.
Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes.
You guys can get us, instead of clicking on stuff and doing all that jazz, you can just get it right to your iPod or iPhone. But we do summaries of what we talk about and when we talk about it on the post, so if you need that, we have that up as well. Till next time, we'll catch you guys later.